varied black and brown humanity at the 13 great gates in its mighty earthen ramparts, politely returning the cheery and respectful Sanu Sanu greetings of the houses who passed this specimen of the great Batur race, the wonderful white men. Idly he compared the value of the caravans of salt or of ground nuts with that of the old slave caravans which the white man thinks he has recently suppressed, and casually passed the time of day with Toreg camel drivers who invited him to hire or buy their piebald, brindled or white camels, and occasionally a rare and valuable beast of the tawny reddish buff variety so prized for speed and endurance. On the platform of Kano Station, imagine a platform and station at Kano, ancient, mysterious, gigantic emporium of Central Africa, with its great 11-mile wall and its 100,000 native inhabitants and its 20 white men, Kano, 800 miles from the sea, near the border of northern Nigeria, which marches with the French Territoire Militaire of Silent Sahara, Kano, whence start the caravan routes to Lake Chad on the northeast and Timbuktu on the northwest. On this incredible platform, George Lawrence was stirred from his weary apathy by a pleasant surprise in the form of his old friend, Major Henri de Beaujolais of the Spahis, now some kind of special staff officer in the French Sudan. With de Beaujolais, Lawrence had been at Ainge's house at Eton, and the two occasionally met, as thus on the Northern Nigerian Railway, on the ships of Messrs. Elder, Dempster, at Lord's, at Longchamp, at Auteuil, and once or twice at the house of their mutual admired friend Lady Brandon at Brandon Abbas in Devonshire. For de Beaujolais, Lawrence had a great respect and liking. As a French soldier of the finest type, keen as mustard, hard as nails, a thorough sportsman and a gentleman according to the exacting English standard. Frequently he paid him the remarkable English compliment, "One would hardly take you for a Frenchman, Jolly. You might almost be English." A bouquet which de Beaujolais received with less concern by reason of the fact that his mother had been a Devonshire Carey. Although the Spahi officer was heavily bearded, arrayed in what Lawrence considered hopelessly ill-fitting khaki and partially extinguished by a villainous high-domed white helmet, and looked as truly French as his friend looked truly English, he, however, did not throw himself with a howl of joy upon the bosom of his cher Georges, fling his arms about his neck, kiss him upon both cheeks, nor address him as his little cabbage. Rather, as his old bean, in fact. A strong hand grip, "Well, George," and "Hello, jolly old son," sufficed, but de Beaujolais' charming smile and Lawrence's beaming grin showed their mutual delight. And when the two men were stretched opposite to each other on the long couches of their roomy compartment, and had exchanged plans for spending their leave, yachting, golf and the moors on the one hand, and Paris boulevards, race courses and Monte Carlo on the other, Lawrence found that he need talk no more, for his friend was bursting and bubbling over with a story, an unfathomable, intriguing mystery which he must tell or die. As the train steamed on from Kano Station, and its marvellous medley of Arabs, houses, Yorubas, Krus, Egbers, Beriberis, Fulanis, and assorted Nigerians from Sarkin, Sheikh, Shehu, and Matlaki, to peasant camel man, agriculturist, herdsman, shopkeeper, clerk, soldier, tin mine worker, and nomad, with their women and pickins, the Frenchman began his tale. Through Zaria, Minna Junction, and Zungeru, across the Jebba Bridge, over the Niger, through Ilorin, Oshogbo and mighty Ibadan to vast Abeokuta, with brief intervals during which Lawrence frankly snored, de Beaujolais told his tale. But at Abeokuta, George Lawrence received the surprise of his life, and the tale suddenly became of the most vital interest to him. And from there to Lagos, he was all ears. And as the Apam steamed through the sparkling Atlantic, the Frenchman still told his tale, threshed at its mystery, dissected and discussed it, speculated upon it, and returned to it at the end of every digression. Nor ever